The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hi, it's Glenn Beck, and it's that time of year when the housing market starts to pick up steam. So if you have been thinking about selling your home, please know a couple of things. Interest rates are going up. They're going to rise the rest of the year. If you need to sell or you're thinking about it, right now is the time to list your home with realestateagentsitrust.com. I started realestateagentsitrust.com because I knew there had to be a better way to sell or buy a home. And with the market average for selling cycle of 6 to 9 months, you need to get a jump on the rest of the market. Competition is going to be stiff this year, but with realestateagentsitrust.com, my team has assembled the agents who I trust, who you can trust, who will get the most money for your home as quickly as possible. At realestateagentsitrust.com, we've taken the guesswork and anxiety out of selling your home. So put them to work for you now. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Realestateagentsitrust.com.
Realestateagentsitrust.com is a Mercury Real Estate LLC.
Home Title Lock is the sponsor. Home Title Lock is a great company that we found pretty recently, and in effort to stop this really big problem that's growing across the country, it's called home title fraud. And it's one of those problems that you're not going to see coming because you won't even be alerted when one of these things happens.
Yeah, this is one of the FBI says this is the biggest, fastest growing crime in the nation. And it's amazing. I was the last one on board here. We each had them come in and show, okay, we can get your title to your home. And they do it. Yeah. And it's $40 and it's that easy. And you've lost your house and you don't even know it.
Yeah. And people can take out home equity loans on your behalf and spend all the money and then you get stuck with the payments. Right. It's a disaster to unwind.
Nobody else is doing this. Nobody else can do this.
Yeah. It's HomeTitleLock.com. They'll put a barrier around your home's title and mortgage and they'll shut it down when there's tampering going on. Get your $100 search free with HomeTitleLock.com. Sign it up. It's HomeTitleLock.com. Check it out now.
Glenn Beck.
Well, whatever your politics, you can't deny that John Stewart has a history of attacking the hypocrisy and high ideals of journalism for his, subversive approach to media criticism. He's a firebrand. Does that mean anything in the era of President Donald Trump? In post-Kavanaugh confirmation hearing world, does anything even matter? Jon Stewart and Dave Chappelle sat down with CNN's Christiane Ohnampour, and Stewart had a few things to say. Listen.
This guy he's giving you all cash, the cash flow in the Trump era for these TV stations and for these news stations.
Can I say that might have been an issue, and maybe it still is an issue for the people who are the bean counters, but
we the journalists, I mean, smite the bean counters, because and I like to use the word smite or smote, because I am a high and mighty journalist. But anyway, you were saying, John, go ahead.
Can I say that might have been an issue, and maybe it still is an issue for the people who are the bean counters, but we the journalists, we, I think, believe that our job is to navigate the truth and to do the fact-checking and all the rest of it. So I think that's what motivates
a lot
of people.
But I think the journalists have taken it personally.
Okay,
they're personally wounded and offended by this man. He baits them, and they dive in. And what he's done well, I thought, is appeal to their own narcissism, to their own ego. Mm. Because what he says is, these are the journalists stand up and say, we are noble, we are honorable, how dare you, sir? And they take it personally. And now he's changed the conversation to not that his policies are silly or not working or any of those other things. It's all about the fight. He's able to tune out everything else and get people just focused on the fight.
He's right. And how dare you say that we are offended? Of course we're offended, because he's saying we are the enemy and we're not the enemy.
That's exactly what's going on. Stewart, I think, is a funny guy. He is very powerful in the way he has persuaded so many people with The Daily Show. He's got an agenda. I don't know how he would handle the job today. In this environment, when Trump is president, the press has an ugly infatuation with him, a session that pretends to be hatred. It's one thing to say those things when you're not in the daily sausage-making business. is he can be aloof and say, you know what, you guys are being fools and idiots. I would never do that. But I don't know if he would be any different. Maybe he would. This pretend hatred, I don't know. It's turned real. There is this stalkerish fixation on Donald Trump. And this fixation on just doing, so we got to destroy him. And they are completely unwilling to admit that they are inarguably a massive reason he rose to power in the first place. And so people are tired of it. Christiane Amanpour, I mean, does anybody not roll their eyes when she comes up? And here's a report from Christiane Amanpour. And he's like, oh, okay, yeah, this is going to be fair. It's the mostly, you know, bi-coastal media elites who act as if they are the voice of America. Who are you? Did you go to some university to get your degree on what America really thinks? No. America, I'm here to tell you that your suspicions are correct. They don't speak for you. I mean, and they should say that. Look, we're in this bubble. We're in with all of the, you know, overeducated. I've got more college education than you do. And in fact, I went to a better college than you do. I know these things. They're in that bubble. We're in a humor. We're knee deep. No, we're neck deep in a humorless time. Now more than ever, comedians are rebuking the journalists. This should be interesting. You know, the one thing is, if we could just detach just a little bit from it, this is really kind of fun and interesting to watch.
It's Thursday, November 1st. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello and welcome to the program. Y'all packed and ready to go, Stu?
Ready to go.
Yeah.
Gonna hit the road.
Yeah, gonna hit the road. Tonight, we're going to be in Richmond, Virginia. We're excited to start our stage show. You know, we've been promising a lot of really good stuff. We have absolutely no idea if any of it's going to work. You know,
it's kind of like the government.
Yes, it's exactly like the government.
Every candidate that's going to be in your town saying that you should vote for them, we're going to promise a lot of things.
Yeah, we're promising this is going to be a great show. Don't know. You tonight in Richmond, now tomorrow in Hershey, we'll be able to tell you.
It's the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of stage shows.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, because she's promising a lot and has no idea whether any of it's going to work.
No idea. But anyway, we want you to come. Tonight's going to be a lot of fun. We're in Richmond, Virginia tonight. We're in Hershey, Pennsylvania tomorrow. Pittsburgh on Saturday. Cleveland on Sunday. Perhaps the hospital on Monday. So join us. It is glennbeck.com/tour.
We should do cholesterol tests at every stop, considering the restaurants we're planning to frequent on this trip.
This is really an excuse just to eat to be able to feel America. Really, that's what this is. To be able to eat in the restaurants that you eat in, like Pittsburgh, Permanti's. I mean, you don't think we're going to have a Permani sandwich?
With the fries
or
on top.
Seven?
Yeah.
Yes, we're going to have that.
And like for any, IRS agent that happens to be listening, obviously this is for the tour and it's part of this business, but it's nice that we get to expense all these food trips.
That's right. Hershey. I mean, is there a reason Hershey, Pennsylvania's on the... Yeah. Yeah.
There is.
Yeah. We love the people in Hershey. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
We do.
That's us.
And some of the products that they have available right there. I love a town that smells like chocolate.
It literally does. If you've never driven through Hershey, Pennsylvania,
if
ever stood there,
wonderful.
It smells like chocolate. It's a delicious place.
So, Stu, there's a couple of things that I just want to pass by and ask you. By the way, Bill O'Reilly's coming on in about 45 minutes.
Oh yeah, a different day than normal today.
Yeah, why is that?
He just says he doesn't like talking to you on Fridays. It ruins his weekends. So he's going to start moving to Thursdays.
Bill and I have so much in common.
This week and next week, I don't remember what it was this week. Next week, because of the election, he's going to be here for election reaction on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So a lot of Bill O'Reilly. Almost too much to handle.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Okay. There's a couple of things. Have you been following at all the death of the two Saudi students in New York?
I have not been following that.
Okay, this is a bizarre story, and I don't know, just my spider senses are tingling on this one. So these two young students from Saudi Arabia, they live in Virginia, and they apply for asylum here in the United States. You know, they're over here, and they're like, you know, I kind of like this place. Maybe we should apply for asylum.
Mm-hmm.
Asylum? Really? These two students from Saudi Arabia. Okay. So they apply for asylum here in the United States. And then suddenly, completely unconnected, they disappear. And they disappear in this Saudis, you know, issue a war. We've lost these two students. We don't know where they are. Can you help us look really, really hard for them?
Well, don't dig in this backyard when you're looking. But yes, please help us look really hard.
Right. So these two Virginia girls, students that had just applied for asylum here in the United States, have been found. They were actually found by the river in New York.
Mm.
Now they were found, you know, at the river in New York. But the Saudis want to say there's no signs of trauma at all, and so they don't know what happened to them. Now, there weren't any signs of trauma, but they were duct taped facing each other, unable to move their arms and their legs, and then thrown into the river. So there was no beating of them or anything. You know, they just might have duct taped themselves together and said, let's go for a swim. Could be. Saudis are looking into it. They don't know what happened to these young girls, but they are super interested and they really want to get to the bottom of it.
This stuff is sort of beginning to feel like we're witnessing the rise of another really dark force nation globally. You know what I mean? Like, where Saudi Arabia's never been a great country that we'd all aspire to imitate. However, they've been, you know, an ally on economy issues. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. with this new prince, it seems like they're going into a much darker path than even they had before.
So they dismember a guy. They dismember a guy who walks into the Saudi Arabian embassy.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds like a joke. And it probably is, because I can't imagine, you know, the Saudis just putting a tarp down there to, you know, catch all the blood on the carpet as they dismember him while he's alive. You do that once. Okay. Do we have proof that they're doing this a lot? No. Now the two Saudi students that wash up on the side of the river, they were just duct taped together. This happens all the time.
Yeah, and look, we shouldn't be mesmerized that Saudi Arabia is violent against its enemies, right? We kind of know that, but like the brashness of doing one of these in a Turkish embassy to a relatively famous person, mm-hmm. another one in the United States. This one isn't proof. We should point that out.
We don't know what happened to these girls. And you know what? I probably wouldn't even suspect Saudi Arabia if it wasn't for
the asylum,
you know, right? The asylum and the cutting up of another person in another country.
Yeah. And let's not forget, by the way, the prince took many members of his own family and other princes hostage, kidnapped them, kept them if you're going to be kidnapped, you want to be kidnapped in a Four Seasons.
Right.
But they were kidnapped in a Four Seasons, basically forced to stay there while they stole what looks like billions of dollars.
Yeah, just took all of their money, took their jets.
Yeah.
I mean, the dismembered guy, that came home on a jet that he had just confiscated from, you know, a friend or a family member.
That is that's the report. And remember, too, the with the Khashoggi thing,
mm-hmm.
they not only did all this stuff, killed the guy, denied it at first, came up with other excuses. They also dressed someone up that looked like him in his clothes.
I am so tired of this story.
And had him walk around the city so later on they could catch him on cameras and say, oh, no, he left a long time ago. There he is in the square.
I
mean, that is enough.
Okay, so the guy is cut up And another guy happens to walk in the hallway and see all of his clothes and like, these are nice. Does anybody know whose clothes these are? Nobody said anything. He puts them on. Then he's like, you know what? I've always wanted to wear a fake beard. And he puts the fake beard on. Now, that beard happens to look like the beard of the other guy. But then he just goes walking around town. And he may have even wanted to be captured on camera because he's like, these clothes look pretty hot on me.
Yeah.
That's completely plausible.
Perhaps he was just identifying as Khashoggi that day. Right? He just happened to feel as if he was the person who had just been
Could
murdered
be.
In the other room.
These two girls, let's say they one of them said, hey, let's see if we can take this duct tape and just pull it off of the roll and see how long it really is. And so it starts, and then they're on the bridge. Of course, you do these experiments on a bridge over the river, and they're doing it, and all of a sudden the wind blows and they kind of are caught up in like a little tornado thing, and that tape just wraps around both of them, and they're like, oh my gosh, we're complete, whoa, psh, completely plausible.
It's true. I think you've convinced me.
That is about the level of sophistication that the Saudis, what's great is we're going to catch them on all these things because they're doing them outside of their country. Inside of their country, nobody says anything because they're like, I don't want to be killed. Outside, they're not used to somebody going, hey, did you just cut that guy up? Now they're doing it around the world. They're like, yeah, I mean, no. What? Don't you do that here?
It's a weird world right now, man.
It is, man. Remind me, I want to talk to you about 1933 and something that I learned just recently that's fascinating, kind of goes into this. And the new technology, the drone technology here in the United States. It's great. Gonna find the bad guys. Palm Beach Letter, Tika Tiwari. He runs a crypto course. Now, I just got an email from somebody last night who said, Glenn, I don't understand cryptocurrency. I don't understand why this is happening, why this is a big deal. I understand. It took me about 2 years to kind of get my arms around this. Then I met Tika Tiwari, and we asked him, because he's one of the leading experts on it. And we asked him, could you do a course on cryptocurrency and on blockchain? Just to explain it so people understand it. Then you can make your decision of, you know, am I going to invest in this? Do I think this is the future, et cetera, et cetera? I think it is. I think everybody should have $100 at least into some sort of cryptocurrency. But you need to understand it. So here's what you do. You go to smartcryptocourse.com. Guy wrote me last night and I said, just go here, smartcryptocourse.com, or you can call 877-PBL-BECK. It's a course, really very simple. It will explain everything that you need to know just so you're educated on what tomorrow looks like. Smartcryptocourse.com. So I want to get to this 1933 thing here in a second, but I just have to give you one more Saudi story. You know, the prince is really opening that country up, and you know, okay, so they dismembered a guy, but look at what they're doing for women and everything else. They're just like us. And you know, apparently in Saudi Arabia they don't like Halloween. Now maybe that's because the monster mash has a different, you know, connotation here in Saudi Arabia. It's like, is the prince, he's a monster. I'm not sure, but it may just be, it's, you know,
could be
not a Islamic holiday. 17 workers have been detained at a party in a private compound at the Philippine Saudi Arabian embassy. You know, everybody was dressed up in, you know, costumes and blah, blah, blah. And the Saudis, I mean, they know how to have a good time. for instance, they've just legalized E.T. You can now see E.T. in a movie theater.
Oh, wow. Jeez, they are exploding into the century of
I know.
The last one.
Seriously, it's crazy what they'll allow now.
Yeah.
So they've charged these women because they were unattached women, and they were together with men in public holding a house event. And the ambassador has said, you know, everyone's reminded to avoid mixed crowds. and consuming liquor and holding public practice of traditions that are associated with religions other than Islam, like Halloween. And so they were, you know, they've since been released temporarily. And we're not sure what's going to happen yet. But I want to remind you that it's the white male that is the terror of the world, really, right now.
The white male.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that recently.
Yeah.
I've recently.
Can you believe he's defending that?
I don't, yeah, you know, there's that.
Hang on. Let's get into that in a second. Let me just say this real quick about 1933. So I've been reading a lot about fascism and communism and how it all started. Fascism was a Mussolini thing. Begins 1915. In 1922, he has already fought in the World War, and he realizes communism isn't the thing because nobody was in World War One fighting for, you know, anything other than their country. They weren't fighting for the international workers. And so he really develops, and in 1922, he starts fascism, and it begins in Italy. So Mussolini, when he does this, he becomes this hero all around the world. Time magazine loves him. The New York Times loves him. They think this is great because it's science and a strong man, and you can move quicker to the future. And so everybody loves Mussolini. But I'm looking at the number of countries that go fascist or have big, huge fascistic movements in their country. In the 1920s, there's only about three or four of them. Okay. And then something happens. And it's not Germany. It's not Germany. It's not the Nazis. In fact, Mussolini has a huge, huge impact. And I want to share the ending of this with you, and then we'll get into the... No, I meant what I said when I said we got to stop demonizing people and realize that it's the white man who is the big terrorist in the world. Coming up.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I was doing some research on a project that I'm working on, and... I was looking into fascism and communism and the roots and how things really start to take hold and when they take hold. Mussolini comes up. He's credited as being the father of the fascist movement, 1915. But I think it really 1922 is when it really gels. And he says, no, it's better than communism because communism is about the workers of the world. This is about the workers of Italy. And everybody loves that idea. Everybody, including the United States and everybody in the press and all the progressives and everything else. And they love it. But it really doesn't go anywhere. I mean, it does in Italy. But Germany doesn't pick this up until 1933. Japan picks it up in 1931. Austria, 33. Brazil, 1937. Chile, 1932. China, 1932 with Chiang Kai-shek. Croatia, 1941, Finland, 1929, France, 1940, Greece, 1936, Hungary, 1932. What do all these things have in common? What do they all have in common? Notice the dates, 1943 in Norway, Portugal, 32, Poland in the 1930s, Romania, 1940, Slovakia, 39, Spain, 36, Yugoslavia, 35, Austria, 30, Australia begins a movement in 31. United States even has a fascistic movement in 1933. What do they all have in common? It starts in 1922. Where are the 1920s? No one was interested in that until there was economic strife. The minute the Great Depression hit, this idea was out there. This idea of, you know, democratic socialism. And then in 1945, once the war is over and all of the dead are counted, all of a sudden all these movements go away. They completely go away. And the world goes into rip-roaring success. Unlike the world has ever seen. It's never been this good. Now we've got these democratic socialist things. No, the Constitution isn't good. No, capitalism isn't good. And you should shut up and sit down and keep quiet because that's not popular with the party. We're in the same position that the world was in the 1920s. Please, Donald Trump, please, Mr. President, please stop with the trade war. Stop with the trade war. It has already taken and wiped out all of the tax cuts. Please stop with the trade war. Let's go to Pat, who's joining us now from Pat Unleashed. He's back on his chain. He's unleashed, in the morning prior to this program.
So he's back on the chain, but he's unleashed?
Well, so
we've chained him? It seems
you chained
like
me immediately after the show.
You can't unleash him for more than a couple of hours every day. Mm-hmm. How are you, Pat?
Everything you just said there is why I get so pissed off every time I see a Beto sign on somebody's yard. Think how stupid can you be? Why? Why do you want a socialist in Texas? What's the matter with you?
You ready for this one? What are you thinking in Florida?
Oh, yeah.
Florida, where he's an avowed socialist.
He's an avowed socialist, by the way.
Pretty much.
Right now,
Gillum. Yeah, Andrew Gillum.
So right now, Florida is, I believe, one or two on the list of 50, the freest states. I believe Florida is one or two. If he gets into office, his proposals put them down in the low 40s from one or two to 47 or 48. That's amazing.
He's ahead by 6 points.
What are you
Madness.
Thinking?
Madness. Every time I drive into my neighborhood, I see this Beto sign. And so last night we're out trick-or-treating with the kids and their kids. So my grandkids are out trick-or-treating. And we go to the house with the Beto sign. And I'm like, they've probably poisoned their candy. We shouldn't go here.
We should stop demonizing people, but these people are poisoning candy.
So then she opens up her door, the woman of the house, and she's wearing a Beto for Senate t-shirt on top of it. I'm like, really? Really? You're even going to all your neighbors, know every single one of them is a Ted Cruz fan. Every single one of them. And so it's just an in-your-face to everybody in this neighborhood.
Excuse me, what is Halloween all about?
An in-your-face to everybody in the neighborhood?
Yes, all about?
Well, dressing up as something that you're not.
Yeah, so maybe it's a big You dress as something that you're not, and you decorate your house to make it the scariest damn house you can. You open up the door.
Yes. And I told Jackie, I'm going to go up and ask her if the $35,000 or $40,000 they're paying in property taxes just isn't enough. Got to pay more.
And Jackie said, no,
you're
Pat,
not going up there. You're not going up there.
Did you
are not going up the note.
I
thought domestic tranquility was more important.
There is a point where Pat Unleashed is leashed, and it's with Jackie.
Yes, it is.
For sure.
That's an iron leash. You can't even move that chain.
So what'd they give away at the house? Party favors.
Oh, no, not even
kidding. Yeah, those little New Year's things that you blow into.
Oh.
You're kidding me.
So first of all, that's all we heard the rest of the night from my grandkids. Secondly, I'm sure they don't believe in candy. You know,
what do you mean they don't believe in candy?
They don't believe in candy.
I don't
for the kids.
Candy. I don't believe candy
it's
is a real thing.
It's going to rot their teeth. I'm not giving them candy. You just can't do that to children. And what about the obesity epidemic in this country?
That's probably what it is.
You know that's what it is.
You know,
that's amazing.
You know what? Yeah. I remember, you're too young, but Pat, you'll remember this. Do you remember going to people's houses before the big fake scare on Halloween, and you would get candy apples, you would get popcorn balls. I remember making them.
All the time.
You would make.
And you'd actually eat them.
Yes, you'd make the popcorn ball, and we didn't have store-bought candy. When I was really young, we did not get store-bought candy. You would go house to house, and people would make stuff. What? So you would make stuff. I remember there was some lady like that Beto voter. There was this lady, she was an old lady, and she lived there, and she thought she was going to be the good doer of there, and she would give us toothbrushes every year.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
and she would give us a toothbrush. And she would say,
stop it.
This, because you've got all those sweets, make sure you brush your teeth. Here's a toothbrush, and I'll have another one for you next year. And I remember looking at her going, I ain't coming back here next year.
This is our last trip here, that's for sure. It's also interesting, you know, that you bring up the thing that never happened. You know, there was never a razor blade in anybody's apple. There was never a poisoned popcorn ball. Okay, it never happened.
So the poison was in a pixie stick.
In Houston.
And it was a dad who killed his own children.
For the insurance money.
It was so sad.
Yeah, really sad. And he was executed for that crime, like, right away.
he
killed his son in 74. He was executed in 74. So
really?
yeah he was
same year.
It seemed that's what I read yesterday. It used to happen pretty quickly.
Yeah,
but he deserved it. And that's the only known documented case of candy poisoning. But there's never been, to my knowledge, ever been a razor blade in why would there be a razor blade in somebody's apple at Halloween? You'd have to be like trick-or-treating at Charlie Manson's house. Who would do that?
I know.
Who
would
do that?
It never happened.
Never happened.
And the pixie stick thing is amazing because he put, I don't know what kind of poison.
Cyanide.
Cyanide. Mm-hmm. He put cyanide in the pixie sticks for his own children.
Yeah.
They went door to door. The pixie sticks he just threw into their bag. They get home. Dad, can we have any candy? He said, not tonight, kids, but you can have one pixie stick. And so he knew. Mm-hmm. And he put the pixie stick and they down the pixie stick. They die. He calls police. Police are like, oh my gosh. Oh, my children. Who would do this? It was one of our neighbors. All the neighbors. Nobody was giving out pixie sticks. Turns out to be him. And it changes America.
It seriously did.
It did. It changed everything.
We
went from
ever since then.
You don't
didn't trust anybody.
Nope.
And it opened up all that. Well, you threw away anything that didn't come from a store. First of all, anything that wasn't prepackaged, you threw it away.
I remember as a kid, looking at those things because we grew up. There were people that made great stuff. Mm-hmm. And you would be like, oh, no, Mrs. Olson, she's made this. It's so great. She only does it on Halloween. You get it. And your parents would go, I'm not sure. You sure you got that from her house? I think so. Throw it away.
Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm.
Or anything that was even like mildly opened that, like, right. You know, maybe, you know, somehow tore it, you put it into the bag. Nope, you had to throw that away too. As if, like, if you're injecting poison into something, it's the rip. They're going to rip it open and then inject the poison instead of just poking a needle hole through the actual wrapper. They're going to go through that much trouble.
It's crazy. And look what happened to us. Look what happened to us. We no longer trust each other. We think everybody's out to get us. Mm-hmm. It was one story made by the media, pushed out into the media because it sold newspapers, it got television coverage, then it distorted and twisted into stuff that wasn't true. We didn't need social media. We needed one story, and look what it did to us.
It's amazing. I mean, to the point where they even had emergency rooms
X-ray
your candy. Yeah.
I remember that.
What a waste of time and money. Crazy. Just crazy.
Kids, and you can take your kid, your candy to the... Nobody thought to say, this isn't happening.
Right.
This is not happening. There's no case of this. None.
It's really hard, though. And it's like the precursor to social media urban legends, right? I mean, it's the same concept, but now it's so much easier and so many more believe them.
Yes.
You know, it would probably be really hard to start that fake rumor back in 1982 or whatever, late 70s. When that became the thing where you had to go get your candy x-rayed. Now, you put it out there and within a week, everyone believes it.
Well, it's because this is the blessing and the curse. In the old days, all you needed was a legitimate story on Walter Cronkite that nobody really saw.
Yeah.
And they heard this story and then word of mouth. No, I saw it with Cronkite. Some guy was killing children in Houston. Mm-hmm. That spreads like wildfire. There's nowhere to go. Where are you going to go? Is somebody going to take the time to go to the library and look up the Houston Chronicle to find the story? No. So it just becomes reality. Well, now we can tell this story, and I can guarantee you that there's people listening right now that are Googling that story to say, wait a minute, is that true? And they're going to spend a day, and they'll read it, and they'll know everything about that story. The problem is, at the same time that blessing has happened, the curse of being able to make fake news, you know, Russian, you know, disinformation campaigns and just sick people who are just making stuff up, that also exists. But we won't take the time. Before it was, what am I going to do? Go to the library and ask for them to send a copy of the... No, now we won't even take the time to do anything but read the headline, a little bit of that story, and send it to somebody else. You got to do your homework. Yeah. Look at how one story changed America. Think of Kavanaugh. Think of any of these stories that are out there. Think of now how many sources have said Donald Trump is responsible for the shooting in Pittsburgh. Not true. Not true.
Yeah, the shooter hated Donald Trump.
Right, hated him. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be, that will be in our history books. That will now be in our history books.
By the way, I don't want to disseminate fake news. Ronald O'Brien, the candy man, was executed in 84, not 74.
Oh, okay.
Oh, all right.
Okay. So, I was going to say, even for Texas, that's pretty efficient.
That would be really fast.
O'Brien, any relation to Beto?
Yes.
He's O'Rourke. I don't think.
Brothers. They both have O's in there. Yeah. So it's like O'Reilly. You don't think I'm asking that about Bill O'Reilly as well?
Good. They're cousins.
That. You bet. All right. Thank you very much. All right. Let me talk to you a little bit about Car Shield. You know, if you have a car that is lapsed in its warranty, it's out of warranty, you know. I swear to you, they build them this way. How long's the warranty? 4 years? All right. Make that part to last about 4 years and 2 weeks. The minute your warranty expires, everything goes wrong. Car Shield is there for you to extend that coverage to make sure that you are covered when something goes wrong with your car. And it's going to save you a ton of money. I mean, just a sensor can cost you now $1,000. Car Shield does not pay you. They pay the mechanic. So you can take it to the dealership or your favorite mechanic. It doesn't matter. And they'll pay them. You're not waiting for the check. So if you take your car in for an oil change and they're like, we found something else, you don't panic. You're like, oh, yeah, Car Shield. Here, call them. They take care of it. Call 800-CAR-6100 before something goes wrong with your car. 800-CAR-6100. Use the promo code Beck and you're going to save 10%. It's carshield.com. Carshield.com. Promo code Beck. Deductibles may apply. It'll be a lot of fun tonight in Richmond. We are going to be performing live. Yes, live. Dancers. There is a strip portion of the program, but usually once I take off my jacket, everybody leaves, so you don't have to worry about that with the kids. You could bring kids if you want, bring your friends, bring your neighbors. It's a lot of fun, and we're going to be tackling some issues too. We have some programs for the Democratic Socialists. I'm a helper, and I'm going to be helping them out. I've got a few slogans and a few things for the 2020 campaign that I think. Going to be helpful tonight in Richmond, Virginia, tomorrow, Hershey, Pennsylvania, Saturday in Pittsburgh and Sunday in Cleveland. You don't want to miss this show. Haven't been on the road for 5 or 6 years and everybody is saying, wow, he's let himself go. So you don't want to miss that. At glenbeck.com/tour, tickets are available.
I almost feel like when you walk out on stage, you just might hear it in unison. He's just really let himself go by like thousands of people at the same time.
Whoa.
Speaking
Whoa.
With one mind.
That's usually the reaction. Whoa. What happened there? So anyway, that's tonight and this weekend. You don't want to miss it. Also, we're coming to Florida in the next week or the week after that. You grab your tickets there. glenbeck.com/tour. Bill O'Reilly next.
Glenn Beck.
We have Bill O'Reilly, where we can pick the brain of a giant. And he's on the program now, a day early, because, I don't know, he can't get up early tomorrow, or he wants to sleep in. He's got jammies, and he wants to play with his dog. I'm not sure, but he's made time for all of us now, and here he is, Bill O'Reilly.
I'll be in South Carolina, Beck.
You're going to be in South Carolina?
Uh-huh. So I'm on the road tomorrow, and I wanted to give you and Stu my undivided attention.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you.
And
that's amazing.
It's not the most informed analyst in America. It's the most astute.
Most astute. Word for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, lots going on this week. Where would you like to start?
You know, I think the frenzy of the media covering the elections is worth talking about.
Okay.
Because, you know, they got a lot invested in this, the national media.
And so does Hollywood. Hollywood is making a push like I have not seen before.
Yeah,
they are everywhere.
Anything. Those pinheads don't mean anything. You know, it's interesting because there isn't one Hollywood star now that can open a movie. It used to be Clint Eastwood or John Wayne or, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. They could open movies that people would just go to see the film because they were in it. That's gone. There isn't any buddy out there of superstar stature. So thus you're left with Robert De Niro cursing and, you know, guys who haven't showered in 5 days and I don't even know who they are.
Oprah Winfrey is in Georgia this weekend.
Who?
Oprah.
Oprah is going to be on the on the tour with Mrs. Obama.
The campaign for the governor of Georgia.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah.
Right.
She's campaigning.
Right.
I think she's going to lose. I think the Republican will win in Georgia. But getting back to your original brilliant question, what do you want to talk about?
Right.
And you must have studied, or you and Stu discussed that for about 3 hours.
Yeah, we did.
It's the national media has so much on the line here.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the Republicans pull it out in the House and they control both houses of Congress, and Trump struts around like it's me because I did 87,000 rallies and everybody loves me, where's the media go? I mean, they're just slammed to the ground.
I agree with you on this, but I don't
frenzy.
Think...
There's a frenzy now.
Here's what they will do, of course. They will say, you know what? America is even more racist than we thought, even with the shooting and the bombing. This is who America is, apparently.
That'll bury them even more.
Oh, I know that, but they won't see that
coming. Bury them even more. You know what? You started to attack the messenger in the sense that people have to either buy your newspaper or watch you on television. You keep insulting them. You're driving people away. And you know, it is a tribalism thing now, particularly on television news. Whatever tribe you're in, that's the station you watch. Did you guys see the study that came out that 89% of CNN viewers vote Democrat?
Wow. Of course.
That came out, and 95% of Fox News viewers, 95%.
It wasn't like that.
Republican.
It was not like that. When I was there and you were there, it was not like that.
Nope. And so now it's, you know, my tribe has this channel. And then all the networks had high, very high Democrat voting people. But I see, and I don't think anybody else is really following this, I think if Trump is reelected and the Republicans maintain control, that the national media in this country is going to explode, and in a bad way for them, because they are as crazed, and that's the word, as I've ever seen in my 45 years in journalism.
So
I've never seen people, they're like foaming at the mouth, Beck.
You know, it's bizarre. This week, Don Lemon said, we have to stop demonizing people and realize that the real terrorists in this country are white males, mainly on the right. That's a quote in the same sentence.
You or Stu or me said the real threat are black males on the left. What if we had said that?
We would be done.
So wait. So we would have been fired and hung and whipped and then tied to a stake with twigs and burned. Okay. So now let's go back. Why can Don Lemon say that about portion of the American population.
Because they know Don, and they know he's not a racist. And, you know, we also know what's going on in the country, and we know Donald Trump is a racist. So
But here's the deal. If the press were fair and looking for the truth, they would cover Don Lemon like they covered Megyn Kelly.
Yes.
In the blackface
yes,
thing.
Yes, okay? They would, yes.
Right. But they don't. So therefore, people who aren't engaged, and that's most people in the media, they don't know Don. Who knows Don Lemon? Go out today in Dallas and ask, hey, what do you think of Don Lemon? And they go, is that lemonade? What?
Right.
They don't know him. Nobody knows him. But the media could have destroyed him, could have said that's a racist statement. I don't believe that Don Lemon's a racist because I never call people racist unless they're members of the Klan or the Nazi Party. Then I can say with a surety that they are. But, you know, you're in a country now, we're in a country now, where the truth doesn't matter anymore, and that's so frightening to me.
So, Bill, I know I'm asking you to speculate, which you never do, but you're looking at the polls, you're following this.
Yeah, I am.
And you're feeling the mood of the country. What do you think is coming for election night?
Very tight, all over the place. Very, very tight. Up late, it's in places like Montana, in Arizona, Nevada, Missouri, in the Senate races, this is just airtight. And I think that's how it's going to play out. So I believe that the Senate will maintain its Republican status, and maybe the GOP will pick up two seats. And the House is impossible to say because you don't know the candidates and you don't know how much money is pouring into these small districts. But the Republicans have to defend so many more seats than the Democrats just by the odds, just by that, you would say the Democrats should be very close to a majority in the House. But if it's only a 3 or 4 seat majority, it doesn't really matter because Trump's going to be able to peel away a few votes from moderate Democrats for what he wants to do. If it's 20, 25 seats on the Democratic Party, then you're going to have gridlock for 2 years.
And you, even if it's 4, you're going to have hearings and investigations and nonstop, don't you think?
Yeah, I doubt it, because from my read of the Mueller investigation,
that thing's over.
Yeah, and he's not going to even issue a report. Mueller's not even going to tell American public what he found or didn't find.
No, it
he's
was
say
no way. It was supposed to be issued right after the election. That's
but
what
he's
I've
not.
Read.
From according to my sources, which are impeccable, he's going to fall back on this was a criminal investigation. We're not bringing charges against anybody in the Trump administration. And that's it. Goodbye. See you later. I'm around if you need me for anything else. Because if you are an investigative agency and you find nothing against Stu, all right, you don't put out a report
Correct.
That exonerates Stu. You just say, we didn't find anything. We're not going to prosecute. That's what he's going to do. So for $17 million, that's what we're going to get. However, the Inspector General in the Justice Department has to issue his report of whether the FBI intentionally booted the Russian collusion investigation. That ties right into Mueller. Now, he has to get specific. But he'll do what he did the last time. He'll go, it doesn't look real good, but we can't really prove it. Thanks a lot. It's the way our bureaucracy works. You very rarely get anybody who utters a declarative sentence and points a finger. They don't do this. These guys are CYA experts.
So what does this mean, then, if the Democrats control? You don't believe that they have a chance of taking the Senate, do you?
No, I mean, if that happens, that's Armageddon for Trump.
Yes. If they take the House, and it's, do you think it's more likely that it's 25 or 3?
I would say it's close. It's going to be under 10. Okay. I'm probably going to be wrong.
What does the what does the country look like a year from now with a House that is controlled by the Democrats?
I just don't think it's going to be that big a deal. I don't think that the Democratic Party is going to launch articles of impeachment because they'll lose the presidential race in 2020. I mean, time goes fast. And I just don't see the leadership, such as it is, of the Democratic Party wanting Donald Trump reelected president. And if you're going to, you know, put up a Kavanaugh situation against Trump, you're assuring his reelection because he's got 45% of the electorate now. Trump's got 45% of the vote now. You do anything crazy, you push him easily into 55.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look, people think that there are all these secular progressives, all these progressives running around. They're very, very few in number, but their voices are heard because the media acts in concert with them.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There aren't that many of them. Most Americans are in the middle. You know, they just want to have a government that functions well so they have opportunity and raise their kids and work hard. That's what they do. But they don't like persecutions. They don't like dishonesty. And, you know, I mean, in New Jersey, that's a race I'm watching.
In okay, so hang on just a second. I want to go to the New Jersey, and then I want to go to the governor's race in Florida, because what you just said kind of doesn't work in Florida. And we'll talk to Bill O'Reilly about that when we come back from BillO'Reilly.com. And don't forget his new book, Killing the SS. Fantastic book, available at bookstores everywhere. 5 days before the election, 5 days right now, you have the opportunity to get in front of price increases that are likely to happen if the Democrats win the House. President Trump has been warning about the risks every American has if the Republicans lose one or both houses this November. The risks are there. I disagree with Bill that he says it won't be really a bad thing. But, you know, who knows? We're both predicting the future. Goldline has a must-read report on this and what you can expect if there is a Democratic victory. You can get the report for free just by calling them. I was out in their offices, I don't know, a couple months ago, and I saw them working on this report, and I was reading it, and I was like, you got to share this with everybody. Get this copy of Goldline's special midterm election report. You can get it right now by calling 866-GOLDLINE. Talk to them about gold. Don't talk to them about gold. Whatever. Just get this report and share it with some friends. Call now, your free report, 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com. Back with Mr. Bill O'Reilly, and we're talking about the elections next week, and Menendez, who is running in New Jersey. Let's talk about that, Bill.
Yeah, he's losing support fast, and if the Democrats lose New Jersey, that will be stunning. And I just don't know. I used to live in New Jersey, how anybody could vote for Robert Menendez. I just can't imagine it, and that disturbs me. You know, I mean, this guy, he just... And it was a hung jury, just got, and then the Senate Ethics Committee hammered him, and then you're going to cast your ballot for this man? I mean, oh, my God. And this is corruption, you know, this beyond any reasonable doubt.
Well, see, and that is the thing when you said, you know, people don't like corruption. They don't, but they...
I know, but what is
they
it?
They seem to excuse it a lot.
5-point lead over the Republican challenger in New Jersey. Now, that lead is shrinking, and the commercials are devastating here against Menendez. So I think that might go to the Republican column.
Stu, do you think? Stu is just really good at stats.
Yeah. I mean, we've been tempted so many times to believe that New Jersey is going to, you know, it's going to happen. And it's really the only example of where it really has was the Christie election when he beat Corzine, but that was the same type of situation. I mean, Menendez should go down for this. I don't know if he will, but I'm, you know, hopeful.
Go ahead.
And in the other states that it's really tough is Arizona and Nevada. Now, I said yesterday on the No Spin News, which of course is the newscast of record now in America, next to the Blaze. I mean, it's kind of split.
Well,
I said yesterday that I don't believe there's going to be a big African-American turnout for the midterms, you know, larger than usual, or Hispanic-American. I could be wrong on a Hispanic-American thing because the caravan got their attention. But the Kavanaugh thing, you know, that doesn't engage, generally speaking, people who are really trying to make ends meet and they're not watching cable and are not reading the newspapers and not locked in. They have to do so much just to survive.
So what is the thing? I mean, I know what's driving the ends. You know, the you know, democratic socialism, stop Trump, driving that, probably the caravan and Kavanaugh driving that. What's driving the average person to go out and vote, Bill, do you think?
Well, I was debating a Democratic pollster, and he actually agreed with me that minorities probably won't come out in great numbers. But then he said, you know, these liberal white women in the suburbs are going to put the Dems over the top. It is tribal. There's no doubt about it. And what's driving people, the overwhelming issue in this country now is Donald Trump.
So
that's the overwhelming issue. His supporters love him. They're engaged. They're energized. And they're going to go and vote straight Republican ticket. And the people who don't like him are going to do the exact opposite. So you can talk health care, you can talk the economy, you can talk the issues. It's about Donald Trump. He knows it, all right? That's why he's running around everywhere to try to, you know, get his supporters to overwhelm his detractors.
Let's go to Florida. Gillum is an avowed socialist. Florida is not Manhattan. But he is now ahead by 5 points. What's happening there?
I think DeSantis is a bad candidate on the Republican side. He's got no charisma. People don't know who he is. Gillum has got the Democratic establishment, lots of out-of-state money coming in, big, big money, so he can buy commercials in the populated zones. The machine... The Democratic machine in Florida is very well organized in Orlando, Dade County, Broward County, Palm Beach County, and the Tampa area. It doesn't seem like the Republicans are as organized. Now, on the Senate race, I think the Governor Scott there, who's popular, has a shot if the people in the panhandle devastated by the hurricane can get it together and vote, because that's Republican territory. But I know Florida well. I taught high school there, and it's not the way it was when I was there. It's now a state that is very, very ideological.
Well, when you were when you were there, though, I believe Cornelius Vanderbilt had just built the first railroad.
No, Ponce de Leon and I.
Oh, okay.
Were very,
all right.
Very
okay.
Good friends.
All right. Didn't know they had high school back then, but anyway.
Searching for the Fountain of Youth.
Apparently never found it, Bill. Apparently never found it.
Yeah. Okay, Beck, you can mock me if you want. But your audience, they have eyes. They can see you.
Yeah,
Sanders,
they can see you.
And they can see me.
Yeah. It's scary, isn't it? I mean, I am looking more and more like Colonel Sanders every day.
Now you got chickens following you around.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the suicidal ones. The chickens are like, please make this end. I can't watch CNN another minute, please.
Did you have a nice Halloween, Beck? I wanted to ask you that. Were you happy with the way the day went yesterday?
Yes, it seems like an odd question, but yes, I was. I was out with my grandchildren.
Did anybody shaving cream your house or anything? Did you get any of that?
No, I live on a compound. I have SWAT teams.
I paid urchins to do it, so now I'm going to have to get my money.
Yeah, you're going to have to get your money back. Yeah, you're going to have to get it because that didn't happen.
All right.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break and then come back in a second. Are you on a book tour this weekend?
No, I'm just doing some history stuff in Charleston. And
some history stuff. What does that...
Research.
Yeah, on what?
We go to where... the story is always. And I want to thank you, by the way, Killing the SS again, the New York Times number one bestseller. And, you know, you really had a lot to do with that by telling people it was a good book.
Well, I know. I throw a bone, you know, your way once in a while.
No, but you're an honest man, I believe. And if you say it's good, your audience believes.
No, it is. It is good. Bill, thank you very much. Hang on just a second. Back with more of Bill O'Reilly and what is coming next week. And a look back a little bit on what has happened. We talk about Pittsburgh and the pipe bomber when we come back.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
with Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com a day early as we head to Richmond, Virginia tonight. We're on stage in Richmond and then tomorrow in Hershey, Pennsylvania, just for the chocolate and the people. Then in Pittsburgh. And on Sunday, we are going to be in Cleveland, Ohio. We invite you to join us. Tickets available at glennbeck.com/tour. Bill, let's talk about Pittsburgh and the Pittsburgh shooting.
Sure.
You know what? Let me start with a pipe bomb, because that happened the day before. The pipe bomb guy. Tell me about it.
All right. So, you know, one of the reasons that you and I have a good rapport, and then, you know, we've been doing this now for almost a year and a half, is that we're both interested, I believe, in what the truth is about each story that we cover.
Correct.
Okay. So the truth is that individual loons, people who have neurosis or psychosis, all right, can never, ever be neutralized. From the dawn of mankind, if you read the Bible, Cain and Abel. That's how far I'm going back, Beck.
Wow.
All right. You cannot, as a society or a government or anything, eliminate this kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. Now, that's where you start, on the pipe bomb thing, on the Pittsburgh synagogue massacre. Now, can fuses be lit? Absolutely.
Yes.
Can people be provoked?
Yes.
Unstable people? Sure they can.
If I may say, especially if you are only hanging out on your tribal site.
Yes.
If you are only being fed.
In a free society, you are allowed to hang wherever you want to hang.
Correct.
So again, you come back to the fact, can society or a government prevent any of this?
No.
And the answer is no. So that all of these liars and charlatans that you see on television and writing on the op-ed pages of the newspapers, they are basically, and they know this, because any clear-thinking person can't argue with what you and I just put forth. You can't. They know that. So they say, I don't really care what the truth is. I'm going to inject gun control into this, or I'm going to inject white nationalism into it, or Donald Trump did it. That's what I'm going to do. Even though I know that's a lie, and that I can't back it up if I go up against O'Reilly or Beck, they'll destroy me in a debate, I'm going to do it anyway. That's what we have in this country. So, anti-Semitism, does it exist?
Yes.
Of course it exists. Killing the SS is all about it.
Right. And is it growing? Yes, it is growing. It's growing all over the world.
It may be growing in certain areas, but I'm more hopeful on that front than you are.
Well, no, I see anti-Semitism always as the canary in the coal mine when a world starts to go to collectivism and Marxism. It's
always scapegoats.
Yeah, it always starts
always
there.
Always does, yeah. And yes.
And it's been building for a decade or more.
Remember, we're living in a politically correct society now, okay? A society that demands that public school teachers don't even mention the Holocaust. You can't even mention it in your classroom or risk getting, you know, scolded or some parent complaining, whatever. That is horrible, but it actually helps in the sense that kids, right, they're not anti-Semitic. I mean, unless their parents are insane inside the house, you don't see that. You don't see white kids throwing rocks at black kids or vice versa. You don't see kids going pointing at Jewish people and mocking them. That doesn't happen because it's not acceptable in our society, and that is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
However, the big issue in America is, what kind of a country do you, the voter, come out on Tuesday, want? Do you want a country run by liars? Do you want a country run by a party that accuses a president of stimulating the massacre in Pittsburgh? Do you want a country where a party told you you can't have due process in the Kavanaugh hearings? Is that what you want? And I mean, that's, I'm not a party apparatchik. You know that. I mean, I'm not. I never endorse candidates. I don't push parties. But I'm sitting there going, who am I going to vote for? I want due process. Mm-hmm. I don't want the president of the United States accused of being a collaborator in the Pittsburgh synagogue massacre. Mm-hmm. I don't want that.
If you have,
if
you had evidence that he was doing that and this guy was influenced, this guy hates Donald Trump. So how is he possibly involved in this at all? It is, it's, I mean, you could say, and I think it's fair to say, with the pipe bomber, that guy is responsible and alone in the responsibility of those pipe bombs that were sent. The guy is a loner. The guy is sick, and he alone is responsible for it. Just like the guy who went to the baseball field, who was a Bernie Sanders worker, not just supporter, a Bernie Sanders worker. That guy
nobody on the right, and I know anybody.
Yes,
right. Said, oh, the Democratic Party, I mean, there were maybe a few far-right loons did it, but I didn't see any mainstream coverage of that, all right? Oh, the Democratic Party, they made this guy go to shoot Scalise and the other Republicans on the ball field. So what's the difference then? Why are we getting the left lying and putting out absurd statements that are taken seriously by CNN and the New York Times, where the other side doesn't do it?
Okay, so here's the reason. And I think this is why it just keeps ratcheting up higher and higher and higher. The press is unwilling to see what they are contributing. And quite honestly, so is Donald Trump. I mean, we all know Donald Trump. Please stop tweeting from time to time. Just stop tweeting, please.
Well, he's cut back in the last week, have you noticed?
Stop saying things like, you know, the press is the enemy. Let's find a new way to say what they're doing. But that's just inflammatory language. It's not going to make people kill people or anything else, but it's just not helpful. The same thing with the press. They are on full blast. They can't hear anything but their own voice and their own little bubble. And so it just keeps going.
Yeah, that's what John Stewart, my pal, said to Christiane Amanpour, everyone. Let's say a big hand for her.
Yeah.
That's what he said. Said the press is so narcissistic. And by narcissistic, that means you can never admit you're wrong. So if
never admits
they're wrong, you're narcissistic.
And I think it's also, well, how dare he say that? We are the press, and we are doing an important job, and we are buttoned down, and we would never do that.
Oh, yeah, Stewart, a big liberal, huge liberal, but an honest man, which is why I associated with him. Okay, he nailed it. He said, look, you know, the press is making a mockery out of what they're supposed to be doing, which is trying to find the truth. That's the furthest thing from what the press wants to do now. They want to destroy Donald Trump, destroy him, as they did Brett Kavanaugh. So what you have now with the election is a fascinating thing. So Americans go to the polls and they have a decision to make. Who do you want to entrust power? Okay, with whom do you want to entrust power? Do you want to give it to the left, which doesn't want due process, which will lie all day long about what's going on, and which isn't interested in the truth but wants to destroy a president with whom they disagree? Or do you want to give it to the right, who maybe at times goes overboard in whatever they're pursuing, but they're not trying to undermine the country as it stands now?
They're not trying to. It really is. Here's the thing. I think Democrats and Republicans, they both suck, and they're both engaging in much of the same stuff. There is a difference here. The so-called alt-right is not from the right. They're socialists. They're collectivists. That's not a right philosophy. It is in Europe. It's not here. So it's not actually part of the right. On the left, you have the radicals on the left, the democratic socialists, that say they want to bring an end to capitalism. Those guys on the alt-right and the left, they just that's That's not American. That is literally undermining the capitalist system and America as we know it. Now, if you want to do that, that's fine. But that is undermining. But I don't think that there, I think there's 70% of this country, the Democrats and the Republicans, that just don't want anything to do with either one of those. Just leave me alone.
I don't know any alt-right people. I mean, I really don't.
I don't think I do either. Do we know anybody who we would consider alt-right? I mean, there's no friends. Yeah,
but we know names of people in the movement.
Yeah, but we don't know anybody. We've not met them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know them. And you know, the white nationalists, where are they? I know the Chicago White Sox, but I don't know where the white, where are they? Where do they live? Do they have a club? Do they go on vacation somewhere?
Right.
That I can actually talk to them?
Yeah.
But I know a lot of left-wing loons, Beck.
I do, too.
Lots.
Yeah. And they are out saying it. An end to the Constitution. It is outdated. And an end to capitalism. And they are saying
it. Power to the people, right on, man. Yep. Let's share the land.
Yeah. This land is your land. This land is my land. I don't know if you know that. Bill O'Reilly, author of Killing the SS, and you can find him every day at BillO'Reilly.com. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right, Beck. Talk soon. Bye.
Yep. By the way, Bill's going to join us on Wednesday. We might even want to get him on our election coverage on Tuesday night.
That'd be great, yeah.
We've got great, great election coverage only on The Blaze. It is going to be wall-to-wall coverage, everything. We've got all kinds of really good guests that are going to be brought in. And it's not going to be your typical election coverage. This is going to be a lot of fun and a little raw as well. Midterm 2018 election coverage only on The Blaze TV. It begins at 6 p.m. Is that Eastern time? 6 p.m. Eastern time. Only on The Blaze TV and theblaze.com/TV. Join us. All right. Want to tell you a little bit about FilterBuy. You know, I was embarrassed to tell a friend the other day. I mean, I really find this, amazing. I never even thought of it. I've owned, I don't know how many houses in my life, you know, moving from town to town. I realized the other day, and I think this is accurate, I've never changed my air filter. I've bought a house, lived in it for a while, then sold it, never changed the air filter.
I mean, I think in my past, I would think to myself, you know, I'd rather just move than change it. So
I don't want to change it.
I don't want to change it. So
it's not that I don't want to change it. It's not that change. I don't want to go to Home Depot.
Yeah,
I don't want to.
The whole process.
Which one do I need? I don't want any of that. Here's the thing. FilterBuy, America's leading provider for HVAC filters for homes and small businesses. They have the right size for you. I don't care. I mean, they have them here for our studios and the air handlers. I mean, you could have dinner in our air handlers in this room or in this building. But they have them for that. They have them for your house. 600 sizes, including custom. They ship free within 24 hours. Plus, they support working Americans. They're all made right here in America. And here's the deal. You know what size you need. You order. You get 5% off for the subscription, so the replacement is automatic. You'll never forget to change your air filters because you've done it once, and they arrive at your door, and you just change it. I just did it this weekend. It's so easy and so great. Clean up the air in your house. Be better to your HVAC system and change the air filter. Go to filterby.com. That's filterby.com. Tonight on television, Larry Sharp, governor of New York. You don't want to miss that. Or the guy who's running for governor of New York against Cuomo. And for the life of me, I don't know why you wouldn't vote for this guy if you're Republican or independent. And this weekend, on the podcast, about 90 minutes with Sean Spicer, he told me before we started, he said, you know, my mother said that nothing good ever happens in an interview that lasts over 30 minutes. And I said, okay. It ran 90 minutes. And he was laughing afterwards. Wow. I mean, I've said some. Yeah, that was honest. Yes. Yes, it is. You don't want to miss it. Sean Spicer, he has a lot to say, some really interesting perspective from behind the scenes what Trump is really like behind the scenes, how decisions were made, things that happened while he was there, how he views the world today. It's what he learned from all of this. It's really a great interview. Sean Spicer. And also how he feels about Saturday Night Live. And yeah, in particular, McCarthy. So it's going to be good. Sean Spicer this weekend on the podcast. Just go to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast and just subscribe. By the way, when you subscribe, it really helps for new people to discover the podcast. If you will rate and review. So you have to subscribe, then rate it, and then review. And that's what helps. It's all this algorithmic crap, and it helps new people discover it. So please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts.
Do we have an election by the numbers coming up here?
Yes, we do. Bit. And we also have a guy who has written a really interesting take from inside the Vatican that this pope loves communism. He's just not met a communist that he doesn't like. In a very, very thoughtful and interesting interview coming up in just a second. We were having him on because I wanted to know, what was the Pope thinking? What is he thinking the way he's dealing with China and giving the Communist Party the right to appoint the bishops for the Catholic Church in China? That's coming up.
Glenn Beck is coming live to talk about the right path forward and to make fun of the people standing in the way. He might not be able to save the country, but at least we can all go down laughing. Glenn Beck Live, the Addicted to Outrage Tour, on tour this fall.
Glenn Beck.
The Glenn Beck Program. Election by numbers.
All right, we are just less than a week now.
5 days. Away. 5 days away, even though states are already voting. Numbers are tightening up, and they are coming out fast and furious. So let's get the quick update here on the election from Stu.
So we've adjusted a couple seats in the Senate based on recent polling. Indiana, we're moving back to a toss-up. We had that leaning Republican last time. Tennessee, we're doing the reverse with. We had it as a toss-up. We're leading it back to Republican because of two polls that have come out that have solidified, I think, that there's those differences. You know, again, these are tough, really tough races. We only have three toss-up races right now, which are Arizona, Indiana, and Nevada. Those are the only three that we have. Right now, we have the Republicans with 51 seats if they win all of their leaners. They can get to 54 with the toss-ups, and after that, they're dipping into leaning Democrat
seats.
Tell
me which ways, Arizona, Indiana, Nevada, which where's the momentum, left or right?
I mean, Arizona is as pure a toss-up as we have in the country right now. I think McSally's a good candidate, and I think she's
the pilot, right?
I
mean, she's a remarkable woman,
and her opponent is terrible.
Can we get her on? Can we get McSally on maybe tomorrow or Monday? We haven't talked to her. She was the first combat pilot.
Female, yeah.
Yeah, female. She's a remarkable woman.
A remarkable person and a good candidate, too.
Yeah.
Has not had any gaffes and screwed up a lot. Her opponent, on the other hand, is called everybody in Arizona a moron about 1,000 times.
I know.
She says that, you know, it's the meth lab of democracy. That's Arizona.
Jeez,
She did a show with a 9/11 truther. She's been a hardcore Code Pink level activist for most of her life. And somehow she is in this race. I mean, it's just an environment thing. I mean, she would lose this race on a normal year. But it's, you know, the environment right now is leaning against Republicans, so it's a little bit different.
We haven't had a normal year, I think, since the 80s.
That's a good point. Indiana, I mean, you have a Democratic incumbent there. So, you know, we had it leaning Republican. They've seen some good polls there. It's a real tough one as well. And Nevada is another one of these situations. I mean, you know, you do have a Republican incumbent. I think he's got a good chance to win, but that is a real tight one, too. So, I mean, I think 52, 53 is a pretty legitimate hope for the Republicans. They should be able to hold the Senate. Getting anywhere above, you know, getting near 60 is not at all really possible. In the House, though, is interesting. We don't really have a House model that we use, but we wanted to look at prediction markets and see what they're saying. So we're looking at, these are now not polls, but prediction markets. And for everyone, every time we do a segment on polls, people call up, how can you trust the polls now? Well, if you're so smart and you know better than the polls, go on these prediction sites and make a fortune.
Right.
Go make yourself $1 million. And bet against the polls.
The polls were actually right. They were wrong because of the Electoral College.
Yeah, the national polls in 2016 predicted a 3.3% average win for Hillary Clinton, and she won by 2.1 points in the popular vote. They weren't predicting the Electoral College. There was some state-level polling that was pretty bad in a couple of those states, particularly like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. And that was a big deal. I mean, polls aren't perfect, but they were not terrible in 2016.
And it is getting harder and harder to tell.
But the prediction markets say this. Right now, prediction markets believe that about 150 seats are safe for Republicans, 195 are safe for Democrats. So that's your starting point. When you add in leaners, you get to 211 for Democrats and 191 for Republicans, leaving in the middle 23 toss-ups. Now, you have to get 218 seats to hold the majority. So 211 if you're counting leaners for Democrats. So they don't need a lot of these toss-up races. If you break up the toss-up into pure win or loss, you know, if it's a one-tenth of a point, you give it to one side or the other, it's 228 to 197 for Democrats. So right now, prediction markets believe the Democrats will hold the House by, to a 31 seat advantage. If you don't believe that and you think the polls are wrong, go vote against it.
Take your money.
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, the prediction markets are, I think, are always the best because that's people putting their money where their mouth is.
Election by numbers on the Glenn Beck program.
So on The Blaze, we're doing election night coverage with all of your favorite hosts and some hosts from other networks and other channels and some of the favorite voices from around the country. You can watch it. Begins at 6 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday night. Make sure you join us. Election coverage that you're not going to get on Fox or
it's going to be different.
NBC. Yeah. It'll be very, very...
We're not going to have a...
Well, we do have a chef coming in because Pat said something happens, he'd eat his underwear. So we have a chef who is going to be preparing underpants in various ways. And it could be a long night.
It was Beto, right?
It was Beto.
If Beto wins against Cruz, he would eat his underwear.
And I think he's right, but we just have to have somebody on hand to help him eat his underwear. Just in case. Paul Boyce is with us now. He's a writer with the Daily Wire. He was a guy who got his start writing for Ben Shapiro in 2013. He is known as Vox Dei for the Michael Knowles show. And an article caught my eye that he wrote about the Chinese cardinals. Pope Francis has a natural sympathy for communists, and he makes some pretty strong statements here that I'm not hearing other people actually report. Most people, if you're a Catholic or you know a lot of Catholics, most people are asking these questions, but no one seems willing to answer them. Paul has. Welcome to the program, Paul.
All right. Thanks, Glenn. Thank you for having me.
You bet. So I've been watching this Pope for a while. A lot of people, I mean, as soon as CNN said, oh my gosh, oh, this guy is wonderful, I remember when before the smoke had cleared the chimney, CNN was all over him, and I thought, uh-oh, that's got to be bad. And so we've been watching him, and he has a tendency to not like capitalism. He has a tendency to like statism, Marxism, et cetera, et cetera. But what he's done in China is truly breathtaking. Can you explain first what he's done?
Yeah, so essentially the deal in China, now the provisions of it haven't completely been fully laid out, but the insiders close to the deal and people on the ground in China have pretty much stated the Chinese communist government is going to have a role in selecting bishops, and the Pope is basically just going to have veto power. And also the underground church in China who's faithful to the Holy See is going to join the official church in China that's recognized by the communist government, and the 30 bishops that are associated with that are going to become a minority in the bishops' conference there.
Okay, so the only reason the Catholics really survive and are growing is because of the underground church. And it's my understanding that having a foreign leader basically appoint your bishops in the history, the 2,000-year history of the church, it's never happened.
Basically, yes. I mean, we have in history, I mean, France, certain, the French crown certainly played a role in selecting bishops. But it never works out for the church when that happens.
Or the people.
I mean, certainly. Yeah, or the people. Mm-hmm. And this certainly won't help the people in China or the Chinese church. What is essentially going to happen is, I mean, China doesn't care about religion. So let's just say, okay, the Pope has veto power on the bishops they appoint. Okay, so let's say he vetoes it 10 times. What motivation does China have to give him a bishop that he wants? They'll just say, okay, it goes unfilled. We don't care. They have no motivation whatsoever to work with the Holy See.
And I want to correct something. Correct something you just said, because I think it was a misunderstanding or misspeak. China has every reason to care about religion. They want to destroy religion and make it into a Chinese tool to bring you to communism.
I agree with that. I mean, they don't care if religion is doing well or if it's healthy. So what motivation do they have to work with the Pope to give him a bishop that he wants if he vetoes one they appoint?
So in here, in your article, you talk about Marcelo Sanchez Sarando. He's an archbishop. And
yes,
he's the guy. He's from Argentina. And he was the guy negotiating this. He writes, if I may quote from your article, he has said about China, quote, "You don't have shanty towns. You don't have drugs. Young people don't have drugs. There's a positive national consciousness. They want to show that they've changed. They've already accepted private property," end quote. Wow.
Yeah, breathtaking. Breathtaking.
So you make the case that the Pope likes communists because he only knows communists that have been persecuted.
Yeah, I think that, and Cardinal Zen says the same thing in his piece that he wrote for the New York Times. I think the key paragraph in his whole article is, "Francis may have natural sympathy for communists," I'm quoting him now, "because for him, they are the persecuted. He doesn't know them as the persecutors once they become in power, like the communists in China." So I think what we have here with Pope Francis is the inverse of Pope John Paul II. Pope John Paul II grew up after the communist revolution. He grew up after all the rhetoric and once they're in power, and all he sees is persecution. So John Paul II has a very staunch position against communism, whereas Pope Francis, he grows up during the revolution where communists are saying, oh, we're for the poor, we love the poor, and of course the right-wing military governments that they're opposing aren't angels either. And so he views communism through that lens, and I think that's what's sort of spurring him to have this soft, warm spot for them and not seeing it for what it is, because the church has throughout the 20th century condemned communism as an evil ideology. It's condemned socialism as an evil ideology. It deprives people of private property.
Right. It's why I think it, I can't remember now. I'm wrong on this. Pope Leo, who was the so-called Hitler's Pope? It wasn't Leo. It was
Hitler. They say Pius the
Pius. Yeah, Pope Pius. But he was not Hitler's Pope. That was disinformation from the former Soviet Union. The communists hate Catholics. They hate them. Now this Pope is getting into bed with them.
Yes. I think that's very clear with this Chinese deal.
What does this mean to the Christians and the Catholics in China in real life?
It means for them. I mean, certainly China is not stopping their persecution of them. They've destroyed several churches and they've leveled several Marian shrines. I mean, even after this deal was signed. for them, they're just going to be persecuted. And I think they are going to, I think their morale is going to be lowered, because unlike the communists in Eastern Europe during the time of Pope John Paul II, they felt like they had a moral leader. And I don't think they're going to feel that. And I think that it's going to harm them ultimately in the end.
Paul, are you Catholic?
Yes, I am. And I want to clarify, I very much believe in the Holy See and very much believe in the Chair of Peter. And my criticism here of Pope Francis is simply as a statesman and as an administrator. And I think that's what the majority of criticism towards Pope Francis in recent weeks, with the recent letter by Archbishop Vigano and the scandals that have been rocking Rome, have been about.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you if you're a Christian or a Catholic, because I know you are, but I wanted to make sure that people know that you are a strong Catholic. You're not one of these, you know, sideline Catholics like I used to be. You're a strong Catholic. So let me ask you this question, and I do not mean offense by it, but I see the way this Pope is behaving here on, you know, on our continent with the scandal of the children, and I just don't understand it. I see how he's come out against capitalism, and he does not seem to be a friend of freedom. Now with this in China, are you concerned that this guy is not real Francis-like?
I certainly am. I certainly think his actions in recent weeks have certainly shown that. Regarding the child sex abuse scandal, he accepted Cardinal Worrell of Washington, D.C.'s resignation after several weeks, and he sent him off with a very glowing letter and notes. And, of course, I don't know how familiar you are with the Archbishop Vigano statement.
I am.
Gave a very detailed account accusing Pope Francis of having taken sanctions off Cardinal McCarrick that were imposed upon him by Pope Benedict. And I think those allegations have seem very credible after several weeks of investigation. And still, he has not given any public statement on it. It's been lots of gaslighting from the people in his circle. So I am very concerned about Pope Francis as an administrator as a leader of the church right now.
Paul, thank you so much. I'm out of time, but please stay in touch with me, because I'm fascinated. The Pope plays a huge role in today's world, he's almost a tipping point in some ways. And I really enjoy talking to devout Catholics about it. Who just don't have an axe to grind. So thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate it. You bet.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You bet. You can follow Paul at Paul Boyce, B-O-I-S, Paul Boyce 39. All right. Let's talk a little bit about preparedness. We have an election that is 5 days away. We are 5 days away from the fundamental transformation of the United States of America. This one is important. This one's really important in a good time, economically speaking. Are we going to start putting democratic socialists in? What? Who are we? Who are we? This is a tipping point election. Now, all the things that could go wrong economically, it could go wrong politically. You also have to add on the hurricanes and the forest fires and all of these crazy things. Take some of the stress out of your life. Just prepare yourself by having 2 weeks of food storage. This week, it's only $75. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner for 2 weeks, $75. You're never going to find that. You'll only find it now at preparewithglenn.com. Preparewithglenn.com. Take care of your family. It's grab and go, really good, nutritious food. And you can find it at preparewithglenn.com or call 800-271-63. This week, $75. 1-800-271-63. Preparewithglenn.com. I'm doing a lot of research on several topics. One of them is just kind of personal on technology and kids and how much is good and how much is bad. There's an article that I've been reading. I want to share just parts of it. Mrs. Stecher and her husband, Doshi, research screen time. Now, these two are from Silicon Valley, and they're technologists. They're people that work for Facebook or, you know, Google, et cetera, Apple. They have researched screen time and came to a simple conclusion. They wanted almost none of it in their home. Their daughters, ages 5 and 3, have zero screen time budget, no regular hours they're allowed to be on screen. They only screen time can be used when the travel portion is a very long car trip or a plane ride. They can, the family every Friday can watch one movie on the screens. They said that they were, you know, part of this of, we don't know how much is good and how much is bad. They have been part of, this couple has been part of the group that is designing our apps and everything else. Chris Anderson, the former editor of Wired, now the chief executive of a robotics and drone company. He's also the founder of GeekDad.com. He said, on the scale between candy and crack cocaine, screens are closer to crack cocaine. We thought we could control it, and this is beyond our power to control. This is going straight directly to the pleasure centers of the developing brain. It's beyond our capacity as parents to understand. He has 5 children. They have 12 tech rules. No phones until the summer before high school. No screens in bedrooms. Network level content blocking. No social media. No iPads at all. Screen time schedules enforced by Google Wi-Fi. And if you have bad behavior, you're offline for 24 hours. And he says that may not be strong enough. We're entering a new age, and I'm wondering when people are going to wake up to this, especially when it comes to China. We were just talking to Paul Boyce from Daily Wire, who wrote an article about the Pope and his love affair with the Chinese communists and what he's doing to the church, which is the actual Catholics that live in China are freaking out because he's allowing the Communist Party to appoint the bishops. And then he'll just rubber stamp and say, yeah, that one's okay. It's like the Fed. They present you with the options, and then the president says, yeah, that one. No, that's not good. When is the world going to wake up to what China is going to be in about 15 months? You know, when we first started talking about the Sharp Eyes program, this social media program that is absolutely a Black Mirror episode.
I'm convinced that Black Mirror did an episode based on this.
Had to have. I mean, it's been in planning for quite some time. Mm-hmm. So it is a truly terrifying George Orwell world. It really is. It is Big Brother watching you at all times and controlling you. Based on what you read online, what you write, who your friends are, where you shop, what your views are, how you behave, if you ever act out of line, if you jaywalk, you lose social credit points. And you can there's no arguing about it. The system just does it, and the system is just. And you lose the ability to put your kids in school. You lose your job. You lose travel rights. You can't shop at certain stores. I mean, you are banished. It is a digital ghetto. You are banished. And there's no place to hide. When? That's 15 months away. And a lot of it is already in place. We played this last night on the news and why it matters. Do we happen to have that audio from the train in China? There's a high-speed bullet train that is in China, and somebody took a video of the announcement that they make. If you find it, let me know.
Because you really could just start a Black Mirror episode with this video. It's that reminiscent of the sort of stuff.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
And we are building the same. Let me give you this. DARPA is now seeking FAA approval for military drones over American cities. Now, I'll give you the story on that. But first, here's the audio. This is the announcement on a high-speed bullet train to everybody on the train. Listen to this.
Dear passengers, people who travel without tickets or behave disorderly or smoke in public areas will be punished according to regulations, and the behavior will be recorded in the individual credit information system. To avoid any negative record of personal credit, please follow the relevant regulations and help with the orders on the train and
okay,
at the
so,
station.
Let me play it again in case you didn't understand it. Play it again and I will translate because sometimes she's a little hard to understand. Go ahead and roll that again, please.
Dear passengers,
people who travel without a ticket or behave disorderly or smoke in public areas will be punished according to regulations, and the behavior will be recorded in the individual credit information system. To avoid any negative record of personal credit, follow the relevant regulations and help with the orders on this train and at the station. Holy cow. 15 months away from China going dark that you have no escape from. They can track you at all times. They know where you are at all times. They know what you're thinking at all times. They know what you're doing, who you're talking to, who you're communicating with. There is no secret, hey, meet me here. You can't. There is no meet me here. And if you're seen with somebody who is also under suspicion, then your credit score goes down. This is terrifying. Now, let me show you what DARPA wants to do. DARPA is looking for FAA approval for military drones over American cities. Now, do you remember when we first heard about drones over, I think it was upstate New York. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
5, 7, maybe 10 years ago maximum. Mm-hmm. And everybody was like freaking out. You can't fly drones over the United States. And they were like, oh, no, it's just the border. And then the crazy people were like, no, you're going to use those later elsewhere. No creep, no drones over the United States. Not just the border. Okay. Well, here's what we have. Military-grade drones along the border, which in reality constitutes a 100-mile-wide swath that encircles the continental United States and two-thirds of its population. Remember, it's all the coasts. According to a new report from Defense One, this level of access is still seen as a restriction by the DARPA-directed military apparatus. New forms of autonomous aircraft take to the skies as the latest Black Hawk helicopter drones that could be ready by 2019. DARPA and aircraft developers want permission to fly over large cities as needed, utilizing a new artificial intelligence system that is literally called the Matrix. Developers see an opportunity for more flexibility. Surveillance isn't mentioned in those uses. But the Predator drone maker General Atomics say they have their eyes on the FAA certification to fly large unmanned aircraft within the continental United States to help ferry people and supplies from the mainland to offshore oil rigs and other jobs, blah, blah, blah. Now, here's what these drones can do. We know that they have the ability to, you know, kill people. But because of this new Matrix, it can fly over crowds in cities, and I've seen the technology. It is breathtaking. The technology goes, and it's flying over you, and it grabs real video of crowds, and it turns the crowds, basically, it sees the crowds as stick figures, and those stick figures are now interpreted by artificial intelligence as either aggressors or defenders. So when you're defending, your stick figure would would kind of lean back. If you're aggressive, you have your arms raised and you're leaning forward, okay? So when you're taking a punch, you would be a defender. When you are throwing a punch, you're an aggressor. And these drones can fly over a crowd and make everyone into stick figures immediately and see who the aggressors are. Now, what they do from there, I don't know. They're just taking pictures, I'm sure. You don't want this stuff approved over the United States of America. Do you want a military-style drone? Do you want to open the door for a drone to fly over our cities? Well, yes, I don't have anything to worry about because I'm not throwing punches. Oh, dear God help us. It is. Well, let me give you this story. Now, we know the drones already fly over the borders, right? This, please do not do this. And I don't think anybody in this audience would, but I just want to be on record. This is a very bad idea. Texas border residents have been warned of armed civilians confronting caravans. So now they're worried that some Texans or some other people around the country are going to come down and go, well, I'm going to defend our border. No, please do not do that. The military is going to be there. It's going to be enough of a nightmare. Do not play cowboy. You are not a border guard. You know, when Obama wasn't watching the border, well, you know, if you live in Texas and you're protecting your ranch, go for it. But we now have military that is going to go and protect. Back off. But let's just say you've got Barack Obama in office. 14,000 people are coming. You live in Texas. They're coming up in through Texas. You say, I've got to defend my ranch, my family. And you are now going to go out. You've got a drone overhead. 100 miles in from the border. That drone is going to spot you. You're a stick figure. You're leaning forward. Do you want this technology? You think this technology is good? Technology is good, and technology is bad. It depends on what you use it for. We are now teaching self-learning machines, AI, to identify people, to look at people as stick figures. You think it's bad now where, oh, stop dehumanizing. Really? Because that drone just made you into a stick figure. You want to talk about dehumanizing? And that drone could have the power to take you out. It's just a matter of just arming it. Don't fear technology. Fear the goals of that technology. What is the goal?
But other than that, you're pretty optimistic.
Yeah, just, you know, it's really, I wish I was on another, I wish I was with Elon Musk on Mars to watch this play out. I wish I could live for another 100 years and just watch this play out. It's going to be fascinating. You know, we're either, Jesus is either coming or some other miracle and we survive. I mean, it's just, it's, we're at a turning point that people have never, ever faced before.
And we really have not put enough thought into how to deal with any of this
stuff. No, it's just, I was just reading the thing about the screen time. The people who were developing it, they've developed it. They said, you know, we're so far off the reservation here, we don't know what the connection is with the human brain. But now as we have some information coming in, yeah, we don't allow our kids to have any access to any screens.
Yeah, I mean, the title of the story is A Dark Consensus About Screens and Kids is Beginning to Emerge in Silicon Valley. You go through it and it's like, they're saying, is it closer to candy or closer to crack? It's closer to crack. We thought we could control it, and it's beyond our power to control.
Right.
I mean, it's easier to do none than just a little. They are, I mean, these are people inventing these things.
These
they're
are
saying,
the guys designing it for us.
Yeah.
Just a quick reminder. Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, said earlier this year he would not let his nephew join any social network. My kids are not on social networks. Bill Gates banned cell phones until his children were teenagers, and Melinda Gates said, I wish we would have waited longer. Steve Jobs does not let his children, or did not let his children near an iPad. The most vocal in the fight against technology with children has become Silicon Valley. What do they know that we don't know? Pretty much all of it. I'm reading this great book called Future Crime. Read it. It's fascinating. But it's all about the effect of, you know, coming technology and also cybersecurity. Let me give you our sponsor here real quick. It's LifeLock. Cybersecurity is when you really understand how far along this stuff is. I mean, it's amazing. There's no way to keep in front of this. The cyber attacks that are going on from countries alone, not just the bad guys, but countries, is staggering. There's no way you're going to be able to protect your devices and your identity alone. It's just a different world. Get LifeLock. I've had this for years. Get LifeLock. It has saved my butt so many times. Now they also have the power of Norton Security. So with Norton Security and LifeLock, they protect the threats against your identity and all of your devices. And you're not going to see these things coming. Nobody can stop all cyber threats, prevent all identity theft, or monitor all transactions at all businesses. It's impossible. But the new LifeLock with Norton Security will see the threats that you might miss. So go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code BECK. Get an extra 10% off your first year, plus a $25 Amazon gift card with annual enrollment. That's promo code BECK at LifeLock.com. Well, we're about to make our way to the wilds of Virginia. We're going to be in Richmond, Virginia tonight, and it's going to be a great show. It's going to be a lot of fun. We want to thank WRVA for hosting us tonight. But make sure you join us. It's going to be a great show. And that's tonight in Richmond, Virginia. Then tomorrow in Hershey, Pennsylvania, which is going to be really fun. Something really cool happening in Pittsburgh on Saturday. And, of course, Sunday is Cleveland, Ohio. So make sure you join us at glennbeck.com/tour. Grab your tickets. Come see us live. Stu and I are going to be, we got a few things to share, and also a few things just as helpers for the Democratic Socialists. We're going to help them out with their 2020 campaigns.
Yeah, that's definitely our goal. It's totally what we're doing.
It's totally
that's
to
what
help.
We do. We're helpful.
We are. We mm-hmm. want to be. We want to reach across and help the Democratic Socialists. So we've got a few things for them that you don't want to miss. Bring a friend. Bring family. Just bring your sense of humor. Bring your kids. It's our live stage tour. We will see you tonight in Richmond, tomorrow Hershey, Pennsylvania, then Pittsburgh and Cleveland. GlennBeck.com/tickets.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.